You are really very welcome to this, the final programme in our series on Sligo Gin. I hope that you've enjoyed peeking back into history and going beyond the wall with us over the past few weeks. I certainly couldn't have imagined when we approached that towering stone border a few short weeks ago, that there would have been so many different things to explore. From tragic times in the 1800s of cholera and famine to hangings and transportation, and then onward into the 20th century with, for example, the writings of Michael Collins.
There's that one quote where he says, even in a cell 12 by 7, a man can feel nature reclothing herself. And it just, to me, it's almost like saying, despite my position, despite the awkward situation I'm in, there's still hope and things are beginning again and there's a new chance.
We've also seen how the jail has inspired artists, writers and performers.
All enjoyment and all sorrow is my destined end and way.
Start here. It starts way back when.
Brings me richer than today.
It's not the usual one that you associate with Collins, you know, this is the younger one. It took me a while actually to see the actual writing on the wall. I love the way that's just almost camouflaged behind his head and to the side. It's beautiful.
You know, it's reflective, definitely.
After all this browsing around in the past, in this final programme, I'm inviting you to gaze with me into our crystal ball and try to see what might lie ahead in the 21st century for Sligo Jail.
We've had people like Barrow Donovan from UCC come. He's the expert from Spike Island. And I said, you know, you literally need to do nothing to the cells apart from health and safety and conservation. So the actual thing that most people will, the bit that the jaw will hit the floor on is there already.
I think the interior of what exists, what's left, the sort of fixtures and fittings and the fabric of the jail that's left is very impressive and very evocative. And I think people like to have an authentic experience. I mean, it's one thing going to a purpose-built museum and wandering around it, but it's another thing sort of getting into a building that A, you couldn't get into before, and B, where you're being told stories when you can go into those cells and close the door and sort of get the impression of what it's like. Being able to visit a prison is something that you can't replicate in a new build. And I think so there's a lot, I think, that Sligo Jail can offer.
Both Barrow O'Donovan and Gillian O'Brien, who you heard there, are experts in presenting jails to the public. And both agree, as we ourselves have found over the past few weeks, that Sligo Jail holds something very special. However, despite that encouraging start, it seems that welcoming visitors into the jail is not as straightforward as simply unlocking the gate. An article that appeared in the Sligo Champion on the closure of the jail in 1956 very neatly predicted what lay ahead in the subsequent decades.
Today, Friday, June the 1st, 1956, will be an historic date for Sligo in the years to come. Reason: it marks the closing of Sligo's jail after that grim, foreboding building on the banks of the Garvogue River has been in use for more than 130 years. During that period of over a century and a quarter, thousands of men and women have spent varying periods of their lives locked inside its high stone walls. Highly commendable as the closing of the prison is, the event must be causing some concern to the Department of Justice. I cannot foresee an advertisement appearing in the newspapers offering to let or sell one well laid out jail standing in its own grounds in Sligo. What is going to become of the place? It cannot be left to go derelict, and it will be difficult to justify the expenditure of money on its upkeep and maintenance for any lengthy period if no definite use for it is envisaged.
And that question was certainly worth posing. For indeed, Sligo County Council did its best for over 60 years to try to make practical use of this eccentric site.
You've got the structure of the building. How do we stop that eroding? How do we preserve what's there? The current executive of the council are keen to ensure that they can right the wrongs of the past in so far as that no further degradation of the site happens on their watch. You know, without a building, there's nothing to talk about. You have nothing for tourism. You have nothing for the cultural asset is gone, so to speak.
That's Kieran McHugh of the Friends of Sligo Jail. And his group has been working with Sligo County Council to get to grips with how best to plan out the future of this site. And we'll hear some more about that later on. Talking to the outgoing CEO of Sligo County Council, Kieran Hayes, gives a good framework for weighing up the challenges and opportunities presented.
The jail goes back to, I think, the start of construction in about 1814.
and it was handed over to the council in 1956. Now, we ourselves have a role to play. We have a fire station there, which again is a vital service for the local community. We're currently located in the space between the outer wall and the actual cells themselves, an area that we've covered in previous decades and we have been using for many years as a storage area. So we now ourselves have to kind of extract ourselves from the building, and we have started to do that. And we have also made a submission to the Urban Regeneration and Development Fund in order to take it on to the next stage. But from my point of view, I mean, we have an asset here. We have the buildings themselves and the construction, even the stonework in the wall, is very, very significant. They are very significant buildings, but I'm not sure they're fully seen. Even from Riverside itself, I mean, there are buildings that hide the construction. I mean, there's a lot of potential here where it can be developed, it can be interpreted, the story behind it can be brought out and brought out to a much wider audience. Whatever we do, we generally try and do it with the wider community's agreement and acceptance. It doesn't always happen, of course, but in this particular case, we have a very, very strong and active local group in the Friends of Sligo Jail, and they have brought the project along. So over time, we need to figure out how we actually develop this site and develop the site in a way that we bring out the actual facility that is here, and which to my mind is a very, very real and potential tourism attraction for Sligo. It was a pretty grim place, I have to say. I wouldn't particularly fancy having to be incarcerated here, but there is a whole area of what's called dark tourism that people are really interested in this. It's also educational, and there's the whole issue of the development of technologies, our appropriate ICT systems that can again reflect that story. I mean, every class goes on a school trip every year, and this is an ideal attraction for them. We see the value of being able to interpret and being able to develop this particular project.
Kieran Hayes mentioned there the phenomenon of dark tourism as a way forward. To me, it has a bit of a sinister ring to it. So what does Tamla McHugh, who we've met here every week and who knows this building as well as anyone, make of it?
The first time I visited, I thought it was really, really quite creepy. And now I'm quite happy to walk through the corridors, no problem, on my own. And I don't feel that at all. I was a former guide, a tour guide at Cork City Jail, so I would be very familiar with these kinds of buildings. And that is a building I will not walk through on my own. You know, it just has a really strange feeling, and people have seen spirits in Cork City Jail, and it's well known for that. But here at Sligo Jail, I don't feel that at all. And funnily enough, we had a guy who was on one of our tours, and I didn't quite realise who he was, but he's a psychic. And he did tell me a couple of stories afterwards, because I was curious to see, did he get any kind of vibe, as they say? But not really. But you know, it's got so much culture in itself that we don't need to kind of do that, you know. And often jails will kind of market the sort of haunted jail, the haunted tours. The kind of, we have done a torchlit tour here, which was great, you know. But it was more that it was just so interesting to be in a jail at that time of the night and to really experience it. But like, I had a scouting group here, and the boys were just mad to know about, you know, some of the more macabre things, and the girls just were so concerned that there were babies born in the jail. They couldn't get their heads around it. And there's so much to the history of this jail. You could write a book about it, obviously, but you could follow any line of research and it would still bring you to such interesting stories. I mean, it was here for such a long time.
Maybe it's not all about a house of horrors and ghost stories. Dr. Gillian O'Brien is Ireland's expert on dark tourism.
There are loads of opportunities, and there's also loads of challenges. I mean, Ireland has about 5 prison museums at the moment, and Sligo is quite distinct in some ways in that it's a different design to other museums. It's also sort of in an area where there isn't, there's not a sort of close by prison museum, so you're not competing with something of a similar kind of offering, which is always good. You know, somewhere like, say, Kilmainham Jail gets 400,000 visitors a year, and I don't think that you will be able to do that here, partly because Kilmainham is so which part of the sort of public consciousness, and it's based in Dublin, which is the highest, you know, number of kind of tourists and footfall. Somewhere like Spike Island jail, which is a challenge to get to because you have to go by boat, they're getting about 45,000 visitors a year, and that will increase. So I think there's certainly a market there. I think that marketing or branding, sort of an Ireland Dark Tourism Trail, is something that Forty Ireland ought to consider. I think it's a very coherent offering if they wanted to do it, but you know, that currently isn't the case. A lot of the sites aren't actually badged as dark tourism, so they don't market themselves as come and see, you know, a place where people died or were imprisoned, but they are very much part of, you know, sites associated with incarceration and things like that. And in a way, that's, you know, the story of Sligo Jail, in that it's a place where, you know, you have crime and punishment, you have a lot about penal history, but you also have a lot about the social history of Sligo, because by looking at the stories associated with those who were kept within the walls, you can kind of plot what were the big things happening, whether you've got a big increase of people being arrested, say, for agrarian offences during the period of the land war. You've got people like Michael Collins, who were imprisoned in 1918, you know, and associated with sort of the fight for Ireland's independence. You've got leaders of the land war, like Michael Davitt, in prison there. So you can tell all sorts of stories, as well as sort of the social and economic stories. You have the stories of children in the jail, and that tells us a lot about childhood and, you know, what point do we start to see children as children, or children sort of as small adults who need to be punished in the same way as an adult needed.
And it seems that the punters would agree with her.
Very impressed, very, very impressed. And I think it'd be kind to our Wild Atlantic Way for the tourist part of it. And both of us visited San Francisco, Alcatraz there. We have made visits to Kilmainham and to Glasnevin. So it's part of the trail for us. We're retired and interested in history and enjoy.
There's a lot of focus on Michael Collins, which is understandable, but he was here for a very short period of time from what I've seen. It'd be more interesting to see about the local people and how it affected them in their stories. It'd be nice to know about someone who was here for a long time, how it shaped them, their experience of it. I mean, I'm reading here now, it says about how people during the famine, they would, like, a theft of a scarf, it's a petty crime, but that would lead them to go into prison, because that was their aim, because then they'd get food. I've read about the cholera epidemic and how this was a bastion against that, because they got the fresh water. And it's, that sort of thing is very interesting, how it's shaped the social mind of, if I do a crime, a petty crime, something I wouldn't normally do, but it'll save me from this starvation, it'll save me from the cholera. And it's more interesting than hearing about someone who's 17 days.
Well, I think the committee here deserve great credit for what they've done. I mean, the amount of work that they put into it is unbelievable. I just think the people of Sligo need to look at it, you know.
Yes, I mean, we've heard of the Friends of Sligo Jail, and I've been dying to get in here, so that's about it. I don't know an awful lot about it.
The graffiti, every different prisoner in would have left their own graffiti or mark on it, and it's sort of, I suppose, reflective of time.
And recording of life.
A lot of hard work has been put in by the Friends of Sligo Jail and the County Council in recent years to try to bring the jail out into the public eye.
So tell me what we're looking at here, Kieran.
Well, you can identify all of the areas that are to be completed as part of the development in the final phase. So you've got everything from Governor's House, the Marshalsea, the Link Tunnel. We have a lovely idea that came from one of the members of our own group of restoring the Market Garden that was in front of Governor's House. It's basically in behind there, that if it's Governor's House, there's gates, but at the moment it is car parking.
A big step forward was taken with the production of a well thought out and practical feasibility study, which sets out a clear roadmap toward developing the jail as a site for visitors. The study recommended dividing the development into five clear phases. The first was mentioned by Kieran Hayes earlier when he spoke about the council withdrawing from the area, while the second would see limited guided tours of the existing cell blocks for tour groups or schools. From here, I think it's best that Kieran McHugh gives you a more detailed outline of this master plan.
The study has identified Governor's House as being an ideal visitor centre for the jail. It's partially restored, I would say 70-80% restored. It's just a question of getting the funding to finishing it off, but it makes a very logical step to, you know, have the visitor experience that people can come, like Spike Island or Wicklow Jail or any of these other jails, that you can come, there's a visitor centre with scheduled tours and a website, gift shop, everything that goes with it. You'll have, I presume some sort of a audio-visual facility there. Then you get you go through the next step. You would have to achieve the numbers that you in order to progress it, which is the beauty of it. It allows us bring people with us that might be a little bit hesitant at the start. But assuming the numbers are there, there is that beautiful old tunnel that would have connected Governor's House to all of the cells.
You describe that for people for a minute.
It's largely intact. It's one of the projects we've identified in the short term as potentially doing some restoration or looking to see if we can get grants for it. It's a tunnel that would allow the Governor to have access in order to get to the cells. And indeed, very poignantly, people that were executed in the jail would have had mass in the chapel at the back of Governor's House. That would have been their last walk, would have been down through this tunnel into the yard to where the rope was waiting for them, basically. I'm putting too fine a point on it. You really are following in the footsteps of the inmates and the staff that were there for over 200 years. So that's very exciting, and that's part of the fourth phase, which is called the expanded Sligo jail experience. And then the last phase, which is even more exciting, which is the essential Sligo jail experience. That's, I suppose, when you look at it now and you see where you're starting from, it does seem it does seem quite a way away, but it builds on everything. You've got Governor's House, you've got the tunnel, you've got the tours, but as well as that, we're looking at putting some form of museum into the building, and also an exhibition centre based on the recent children's book that we launched, My Tale Untold. It will be based on the life of a child inmate in the jail. It would bring the book to life. So you've got exhibition centres, you've got a museum, and the jail is part of a region that's identified for a lot of investment in the future, which is the Cranmore Restoration Project. At the moment, the exercise yard of the jail is covered over with an old corrugated roof, but that you basically build a glass cube in that space, and you end up with Sligo's convention centre, for want of a better word. CHL has identified a building in Pennsylvania where they've actually, it looks like a very, very similar building. And you look at that going, well, that seems crazy and ambitious. But you know what? You stand back and you go, why not? And when we presented this to the previous CEO of the council, he said, indeed, why not? And going, well, why shouldn't Sligo have a conference centre built in a historic setting in Sligo jail? Why should the medics been going down to somewhat old and jaded hotels down in Killarney, spending a fortune down there, when they could just as easy been doing that in Sligo? That fits in with how Sligo's trying to position itself, and the fact that it would happen to be a beautiful architectural building within one of the most historic buildings in Ireland is no reason that it shouldn't happen. So again, Kieran Hayes would have said, well, if we can't plan for these things, we're never going to achieve them. So we should dream big. And while it seems quite a few steps away from where we are now, as I said, if we can't aspire to these things, if you can't dream big, you're never going to achieve anything of significance.
This optimism is fully supported by Kieran Hayes, former CEO of Sligo County Council, the main partner in this dizzying enterprise.
To my mind, Sligo has a significant tourism potential that we haven't yet fully tapped into. And there are different elements of the Sligo story that have yet to be told. If you take Fort Hill, for example, going right back in history, there's a whole story there that is still to be told, it's still to be developed and still to be interpreted, that particular site. There's also the Spanish Armada. And then there's the jail here. Think about it. We have quite a number of stately houses within Sligo. They have complementary offerings. In Lissadel, for example, I don't know what the exact figures are, but you're talking in the region of 40,000 people visiting Lissadel annually. Now, if we're in a position to bring attractions such as Sligo Jail forward, then you're adding to that overall offering. And that's the way I'm approaching it from a Sligo perspective. Those people are going to have to use the hospitality facilities in Sligo. It brings people right into town. Ultimately, what we'd be aiming to do, and this is certainly not day one, but ultimately we'd be looking at targeting around 55,000 visitors per year. Now, if they're in town, they may spend in town. And I think we need to be thinking outside the box in order to attract people into town, develop the public realm so there's a nice look and feel about it. They have free public Wi-Fi. And while they're here experiencing all that they can experience in that nice urban realm, they will spend in the local shops.
Kieran is right. One of the things that Sligo Jail really has going for it is its location at the heart of Sligo Town.
The jail is one of the very few projects that's in walking distance of town. So a lot of these other projects you have to get buses out to see. You know, if you arrive on a 4-hour bus tour to Sligo and you walk into the tourism office and say, I'm on legs, what can I see? I mean, you've got the Abbey. There's loads of buildings you can look at the outside. You can see the courthouse, you can see City Hall. But, you know, there's not a whole lot you can actually walk into and directly interact with. You know, you have a beautiful experience walking down Durley Park. It really is in a very close proximity to town and it's within very easy reach. And we are inundated with requests from the business community. How soon can this start? You know, people always talk about tourism for this. This is a cultural asset that belongs to the people of Sligo, because everything that happened in Sligo, from the famine to the 1916 rising to the cholera outbreaks, all of them are reflected in the jail's history.
We have a lovely idea that came from one of the members of our own group of restoring the market garden that was in front of Governor's House. Apparently it was absolutely stunning. It was a prison garden. Could it be a community garden? Mm-hmm. Could we restore that to what it was? This building is right bang in the middle of the heart of Cranmore. It belongs, as if it belongs to the people of Sligo, it certainly belongs to the people of Cranmore.
Yeah, we need to get this up so that people from, you know, Australia or France can come and see this. But in the interim phase, it's important that people that have a connection to the building locally get and that appreciate their history, that it really belongs to them. And it's just making sure that they can get access to it in some form while we work on the bigger stuff. And that's the advantage of the steps, is that you don't hold out for the day that you open the door on the finished product.
And on that note, before we get too far ahead, maybe I should remind you of some of the things that the jail has to offer these visitors.
We can see the spy holes here, and then, you know, there's steel on this part of the door and there's timber on the far side. And if we go into the cell here, you can see again the similar cell furnishings to what was in the last cell. And here is the handle for the little paddle outside, and then the very basic shelf then for any personal belongings, probably a wash bowl or anything like that. There would have been a very basic bed, table and a chair, very basic furnishings. It's quite small, yeah, so the beds would have been just a straw mattress. And then we've got at the back of the cell here this large pipe. So this is one of the water pipes. When gas was introduced to the prison in 1879, it allowed for hot water to be brought around the jail. And so these pipes were a source, like a radiator, providing heat for the prisoners in their cells. So we're here now, Aisling, in the asylum wing, and you can see we've got the flag floor here, well-worn, and you can see there's much larger windows in these cells than in the previous ones. We have the doors facing inwards and the doors facing outwards, and maybe that was by design, having the doors facing inward, so to prevent a prisoner from jumping out at you, that you could push the door inwards on them if they were being unruly or anything like that. The treadwheel was an addition to the prison. They brought it in the 1820s, and I suppose for want of a better description, it was like a giant hamster wheel, and it was operated by the prisoners. So it was 10 minutes on and 5 minutes off, 10 minutes on, 5 minutes off, for the duration of the day. So you're talking 10 hours a day walking the treadmill. And, you know, as well as it being a punishment, it actually acted as a water wheel. So it brought water up from the Garvogue River, brought it to the jail here, flushed out all the drains, kept everything clean, fresh water, you know, so it was really actually really state of the art. You could have had quite a number of prisoners on it at one time. So men, women and children had to walk the treadmill. And even we know of instances in other jails where the women were required to knit or sew while they're walking on the treadmill. This is a solitary confinement cell. It's crazy, isn't it? I'm really not sure what the design was.
Could a person even stand up in there?
I'm not sure whether they put that floor in to make it more confined, to make it more horrible to be in there. You see the way the spy hole is covered, so there's very little light penetrating here. It only comes through that vent up there for a bit of air. But look at this. That's not part of the design. Somebody etched that on while they were in the cell.
So the inside of the door is scraped out.
Probably with the back of a spoon or something like that, yeah. That was the only thing that could occupy them, was to scrape at that. It's actually carved into it. While we're standing outside here now, Aisling, we can really see this tall building here in front of us. It's another three-story building with an annex to the back of it. And this is actually the Marshalsea. So this is locally known as St. Anne's, but this was a debtor's prison. So they were a different, debtors were a different class of prisoner as well. They were purpose-built debtor's prisons within jail. And the more famous one is the Marshalsea in London. Yeah. Now, they were treated differently in that they could bring their own furnishings into their cells. They could provide their own food. So they had a certain amount of freedom if you needed to go out, leave the prison in order to sort out your finances and presumably attempt to pay your debt, that you could leave a member of your own family in your place while you were gone. So presumably there was a great amount of trust between the family to allow that, because otherwise you could be left behind in prison.
Bringing all of these elements together will undoubtedly require cold, hard cash. I asked Ciarán McHugh about how this far-sighted plan could be funded.
The ball is firmly in the council's court when it comes to this. Then, you know, Bord Fáilte are looking, as I said, because this project would tick a box in a national organisation's wish list. You know, it should be something that's very funding friendly. I think one of the reasons that we've done well with the council is we've never come and said, you should spend all your money doing this. You know, even before COVID hit and the purses, it is an expensive project. It is, but it is something that fits into the national picture. So we just want to, I suppose, increase our national profile to make sure that the project is as funding friendly as possible
and
at a national level.
What level of funding are you talking about?
Well, I think the study talks about the capital expenditure of, to see the whole thing through, would be a couple of million, which is a big sum, but in the scheme of things, it's not a massive sum.
We've got consultants, again, in collaboration with Friends of Sligo Jail. We've got a consultant's report that has given us, I suppose, a step-by-step guide as to how to develop the facility. And we're at the start pretty much of that process. The starting point is to extract ourselves from the building and then put together, I suppose, a master plan for the entire site and then source the funding in order to develop it over time on a phase-by-phase basis. I suppose it's like eating an elephant, you know, it's one bite at a time. There's going to be a lot of patience required in terms of the progress. Even to get to the point that we're at today has taken quite a number of years. So it's not something that's, you're not going to flick a switch and have it turned over as a major tourism attraction in the space of a year. It'll certainly be longer than that.
And presumably in a project of this scale, funding is a huge issue.
Yeah, well, I suppose the funding circumstances of Sligo County Council are no secret. By the same token, we've managed to do an awful lot in with very little funding. I suppose ultimately with any project, if you're looking for public funding in order to bring it through to fruition, we need to know that there's a business case behind it. We need to know that it will stack up ultimately. And that was the whole purpose of the feasibility study. What that also allows us to do is make those further applications for further funding. And that's the way we have used the feasibility study itself. My own personal approach to a lot of these projects is if the projects are very worthy and viable, then it behoves us really to go and try and put a funding package together in order to bring them to fruition. We've been able to do that with a lot of projects to date, and hopefully it'll be the same result in terms of Sligo Jail.
So once we get to this stage, what is the best approach for Sligo Jail? Gillian O'Brien lays out the options.
Well, I'm a historian, and at the moment I'm doing a tour of Ireland, looking at all the dark tourism sites in Ireland, which are basically any sites associated with death, suffering, misery, and obviously jails are part of that. Taking any sort of dark tourism site, you can tell whatever story you like, and a lot of them are commercialised, and so you can do things like have a hen party or a stag party in a former prison, or you can get married in a former prison. But other sites then take a more academic approach, where the focus is more educational than it is to do with entertainment, and some do a bit of both. So a lot of the same sources can be used to tell those stories, but it depends then on how each group marshals those stories and tells, you know, depending on how they want to tell a particular story, and also what their need is. Do they need to be commercial, or are they sort of state funded, so the profit you know, margins aren't quite as tight as they would be if you're not getting funding from a state body. And the challenges associated with that is, how do you get people through the door, and how do you get them, if you're targeting it at a local audience, how do you get them to come repeatedly? So everyone will come once at least, but then you've got to think more broadly is how you get them to come back, because you won't survive just on sort of the 6 or 8 weeks of a summer. And it's to think about, how do you guarantee that all the school kids will come, and that they'll come every year, and that they'll work through projects on it, and that it becomes sort of a community resource and something that becomes part of sort of the story of Sligo. And jails are very often hidden when they're operational, no one wants to talk about them. And so the Friends of Sligo Jail have done a remarkable job in sort of increasing awareness of the jail, and the book is a great way of getting kids actively involved. And I think, you know, you start at the ground level, and if you start with kids, you're also starting then with the schools and also the kids' parents. So it's an excellent sort of entry into building awareness of the product, and then what you actually develop from it, depending on how much money you get, is, you know, full of both opportunities but also challenges.
In addition to the evocative site and buildings, a range of sources exist from which the lives and experience of inmates in the Sligo prison can be reimagined.
We've found the public so supportive and really enjoying what we've been doing, and really, you know, coming to us with their stories and looking for their history. And, you know, they may have had an ancestor who was a warder here, or a prisoner here, or the governor here, you know, and we've done everything we can to assist and to help. You know, we've had people who are ancestors of prisoners who've been transported from here to Australia, you know, to speak to us and tell us their stories. We've had people from America visit here who had relatives. And recently I ran a series on Facebook, just a photo day of the jail, and we had such a lovely message from a lady, and we had, you know, where she felt like she was back where her grandfather used to work. It really brought it all back to life for her. And, you know, it's just so lovely to hear that people really are connecting with this building.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that it's not just a big old lump of limestone. That it's, you know, it's still very much in people's memories.
As you've already seen in previous episodes, there's a wealth of information contained in the Inspector of Prisons reports, which date back to the early 18th century and stretch right up to the year that the prison closed its doors. These include some minute and very human details which bring life in the prison into focus, including what prisoners ate, complaints they made, and the challenges faced in running the prison.
So the daily life of a prisoner is based on the inspector's reports which were done of prisons. I was up early, 6:30 the bell was rung, prisoners get up and wash and clean their cells. 6:45 the officers unlock the cells, and then it's out to the exercise yard. And we know here in Sligo that there were separate exercise yards, walled exercise yards for each cell block. Labour commenced then at 8 a.m, so the different kinds of labour depending on what your sentence was. So if you were sentenced to hard labour, then you would have to do something like rock breaking, chopping timber, and one of the hard labour activities was walking the treadmill or the tread wheel, and it was operated by the prisoners. So it was 10 minutes on and 5 minutes off for the duration of the day. You could have had quite a number of prisoners on it at one time. So after the hard labour, the prisoners then returned to their cells for breakfast, and then the labour took place in the cells. So that was, generally speaking, you know, whatever smaller activities, sewing, knitting for the females, and then for the males it would have been oakum picking. Now children and women oakum picked as well. This is basically taking apart tarry ropes, shipping ropes, that kind of thing, and you had to take the fibres apart from it, and then this was all recycled and used then to caulk up the seams and ships. Any repairs or anything like that that was required within the jail was done by the prisoners themselves. So you'd spend a few hours doing that, at least half the day was spent doing that, and then it was back out into the yard for exercise, and then again more labour, whether that was outside of the treadmill or whichever punishment you'd been assigned to. Then supper, school and religious instructions after that, and then lights out were pretty early, about 7:30 lights out, and you spent the rest of the night in your cell.
I mean, we wouldn't like to kind of Disney-fy it or do anything like that. That would be totally not the point. It speaks for itself, you know. It really has this fabulous atmosphere, you know, to experience, to be able to go back in time and experience what it was like to be a prisoner here. you know, I suppose we won't get the full experience, obviously, but you'd be able to walk the corridors, you're able to see the cells, you're able to see what it was like, the conditions, you know, to experience that. So it's incredible. You can imagine the big boots of a turnkey walking up and down the corridors here, and the jingle of the keys and, you know, the rattling, and you can kind of understand why they have that name. And it must have been a really oppressive place as well, but very little has changed here, really. And even you can see a shape of a figure here in some of the plaster work that, you know, prisoners would have just picked off that to keep themselves occupied. They would have spent quite a large amount of time in their cells. Looks like somebody's name. And then we've got these little score marks here, so somebody's counting down their sentence. And we can see those all across the jail, and we have a lot of dates and things. We can see more graffiti here, and this is where we have the countdown, 1 month, 2 months. Would have been painted every year, lime washed every year. So this is just layers and layers. So you've got all that history in under. We can use a technique, it's a photography technique, using the proper kinds of cameras and the proper kind of light. We can actually pull those hidden etchings out of the walls, so you can actually see them. We've got like the very obvious graffiti that you can see on the walls and you can read, but there's definitely the hidden inscriptions and markings and drawings and things like that.
Dr. Laura McAtackney has spent painstaking months examining the walls of Kilmainham Jail and recording the graffiti that they hold. She gives a flavour of what could be uncovered in Sligo based on her research in Kilmainham Jail.
Some of the pictures were shown by Tamlin earlier, and there was, you know, the kind of marking time, and there was dates, and they looked like names and signatures. And I think that's very similar to what we find. Like, people were marking that they were there. They weren't ashamed of being in prison for fighting for, you know, their nationalist cause. So they were quite happy to put their name on the cell. Some of them put their addresses, put the dates they were in there. I'd be interested to see if people are coming back. In Kilmainham, they definitely came back. In the 1930s and 40s. I know the Sligo Gate Jail didn't close till later, but I'd be interested if people came back afterwards to put their names on the walls. I find, particularly amongst the graffiti from the soldiers, there was a lot of kind of imageries of war and death heads and stuff like that, like things I just wasn't expecting. And I think whenever you see a picture of the four courts or you see a picture of Kilmainham Jail, like on the wall of Kilmainham Jail, that kind of comes home to you, like what these people are trying to articulate while they're in there. And, you know, particularly pictures of soldiers with like Prussian helmets on. It just really made you sense that what, you know, that people actually were here. It's not just etchings on the wall. So I think probably those are the most striking ones. Sometimes it's hard to figure out if it was men or women who were creating the graffiti. And I think it's important not to make assumptions if there's a picture of a woman that a woman created it, or a picture of a man that a man created it. Thankfully, a lot of the times people wrote their names and addresses and stuff, so we can actually gender that pretty easily. But I think looking at the relationship between pieces of graffiti means that you can actually start to find that, instead of just looking at it isolated and trying to decide if it was male or female. Actually look at what's beside it, and then you should be able to decide from that.
So could Sligo Jail have it all? Quite possibly. Only time will tell whether the potential that undoubtedly lies in this sturdy, uncompromising amalgam of stone and iron can claim a place in the heart of Sligo. But as we've seen so far, the signs are good.
But the building is only a stage. It's just a stage for stories. It's what happened in those buildings. Whether you see 200 cells or 5 cells, it's the story behind them. It's the people. That's the real asset that's there.
I'm one of those history geeks who I visit jails all over the country and all over the world, anywhere I go. I love the old buildings and the castles and jails and things like that. This story is woven around the history of Sligo Jail. It's a wonderful piece of storytelling, and I think it brings history to life in a really dynamic way. And I think those are the interesting stories, the stories of the people who were on one side, but they weren't necessarily goodies or baddies, you know. And I think all of us are much more interesting than that. We're not as simple black and white figures.
I see Wayne there at the moment is telling the story. We can hear him in the background there. He really is igniting and revamping and reliving what went on in Sligo Jail. So this is what it's all about. And it's as good as any other lesson taught today in St John's National School. If they don't go and visit it and they don't hear about it, I says they might never know. The history might be lost. And I think it's a very good way of reigniting their interest in history. But I'm also looking forward to maybe the redevelopment of Sligo Jail, because, as I said, if these places are let go into disrepair and ruin, we lose that history.
hope that someday, not too long from now, you'll be stepping through the gates of Sligo Jail in place of hearing it here recounted on the airwaves. Thanks for keeping company with me over the last few weeks. I hope that our discoveries have made you reconsider Sligo Jail, the amazing source of history that lies hiding in plain sight at the centre of Sligo Town.